You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. And we have a reason for you to jump out of bed at the crack of dawn on Tuesday, June 8th, the transit of Venus. Now, what's, with the right equipment, you'll be able to watch Venus crossing the disk of the sun. Not excited about that? It's not quite a solar or even a lunar eclipse. Well, it's much more rare. The transit doesn't come around all that often. In fact, it only occurs twice each century or so. And next Tuesday's transit is the first one in 122 years. So I think it's safe to say that no one alive today has seen the last transit of Venus. And over the centuries, it has been a pretty big event. Astronomers first figured out how to measure the distance of the Earth from the sun by timing Venus as it crossed the face of the sun. And the push to make measurements of the transit all over the world led to the European settlement of distant lands, including Australia. So for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk about Venus and her transit across the sun. If you'd like to take a look at it, we'll tell you how to do that, and we'll find out if there's anything new to learn from watching this year's transit. So let me introduce my guest, Mr. Eclipse himself. You can go to his website, MrEclipse.com. Fred Espenak is an astrophysicist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. Ira, happy to be here.
Thank you. Well, I say there hasn't been a transit of Venus for what, 122 years, and now we're going to see two of them in the next 8 years? How does that work?
That's right. Well, Venus's orbit around the sun is tipped about 3.5 degrees to the Earth's orbit. And you can only see a transit when we happen to be lined up just the proper way. That is, we have to be at that point along Venus's orbit where it passes directly between the Earth and the sun. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, Venus passes either above or below the sun, below the plane of the Earth's orbit around the sun. So we don't usually get a chance to see a transit, but during this next 8-year period, there are two rare opportunities to see this simply because of the timing of Venus's orbit and the fact that we're at the right place for these lineups.
And what's the difference between a transit and an eclipse? I mean, Venus is not going to block out the disk of the sun.
No, the terminology for eclipse has changed from the historical labels. Modern astronomers denote an eclipse as taking place when one celestial body passes into the shadow of the other. Mm-hmm. So when you see an eclipse of the moon, for instance, that is an eclipse. The moon is passing into the Earth's shadow. Now, surprisingly, by going with those modern definitions, an eclipse of the sun isn't really an eclipse of the sun because we're not seeing the sun pass into the moon's shadow. What we're seeing is an occultation. The moon is occulting or blocking the sun. So there are two basic types of an occultation is where a large body covers up a smaller body. In the case of a total solar eclipse, that's really an occultation of the sun by the moon. Mm-hmm. For a transit, that's a situation where you've got a smaller astronomical body passing in front of a larger one, mm-hmm. like Venus passing in front of the sun.
So when we see it, if we see it, and we'll talk about how to see it, what should we expect to see?
Well, Venus will be a relatively small black disk compared to the sun. It'll only be about 1/130th of the sun's diameter. Mm-hmm. So it would be the size of a very large sunspot. Mm-hmm. It'll appear perfectly circular. You should be able to see it. It should be visible to the naked eye if you have a solar filter to look through.
And that's important, right? You don't want to look through a pair of binoculars or with your naked eye at the sun. You need that filter.
That's right. It's always dangerous to look directly at the sun. Sometimes the weather conditions are just right that you can take a little bit of a glimpse at the sun, maybe at sunset or something, but it's hard to predict or give advice on how to do that.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. And there are all kinds of places on the web to watch this if you can't see it yourself. And it's not going to be available to see everywhere. I know from the western half of the United States will not see any of it. And we here in the east and in New York will see it from when the sun rises. It will have begun sometime after 5 a.m. and go to around 7 a.m., an hour and a half or so of viewing time. But other places will you can watch it on the Internet. I've been searching and seeing.
There are sites all over the world that are going to be making webcasts.
Yeah. We talked about it being significant centuries ago because it helped ancient astronomers figure out the size of the solar system. Is it still a significant scientific event for astronomers today?
Well, it certainly doesn't have the value and importance that it did to astronomy during the 17th and 18th centuries, because that's when major expeditions around the world launched these trips to observe the transits of Venus from the far corners of the globe. And that was all about trying to measure the absolute scale and distance of the solar system. Venus was the key to that. Today, we can measure the distance to Venus using radar very accurately to within 10 meters or so. Mm-hmm. So transits don't play a role in that regard anymore. Mm-hmm. They're really more of a scientific curiosity and a beautiful natural phenomenon, as well as a stepping stone into understanding and learning more about the history of astronomy and the history of science and how science works.
Who were the first people to report actually and document that they had seen this?
Well, the first person who had actually seen a transit of Venus was a young Englishman named Jeremiah Horrocks. He was only about 20 years old. And he not only observed the first transit, he actually predicted it only a month before it took place. Unfortunately, he died about a year later, but he held great promise. He had done a lot of astronomy in his very short lifetime. But another century passed before the next transit was visible.
And didn't the famous Halley of Halley's Comet, did he see the transit?
Well, he played a key role in the history of transits, but he never actually saw a transit of Venus. He saw a few transits of Mercury, which are not quite as interesting. They're much more frequent. There are about a dozen or so transits of Mercury a year. But seeing a transit of Mercury gave Halley the idea that this would be a way to try to measure the distance to the Sun, the solar parallax, and measuring Venus's shift from two different locations on Earth is the key to measuring that distance.
1-800-989-8255 was our number. Let's go to the phones. Robert in Burlington, Vermont. Hi, Robert.
Hi. I have a question about what we can use to look at this thing. About I think it was 1993 or 94. I was at Dartmouth, or I was at Hanover anyway, and there was a total annular eclipse of the moon. So it didn't completely cover the sun. Is that the same? Would that be technically the same thing that what this thing with Venus is when it doesn't completely cover the sun?
Technically, that's right. An annular eclipse really is a transit of the moon across the sun, because
right.
It doesn't completely cover the sun.
And I use both a pinhole, you know, that classic little pinhole thing with a, I think I used a Quaker Oats
right.
Box or something like that. And I also had a pair of really, I mean, they were specially made to view this. You know, they had cardboard sides on them, but some kind of sunglasses that had extremely dark plastic lenses. Would that be good enough to view this safely?
Well, those cardboard goggles that you're talking about,
right.
Those are specifically made for solar eclipses.
Can I use them?
I don't want anyone in the audience to mistake those for sunglasses. Sunglasses
right.
are not safe.
Right. That's, I guess I should have said goggles, but I can use those to view this the transversal or whatever of Venus?
Transit.
Absolutely.
Transit.
Absolutely.
There's a website called transitofvenus.org.
All right.
One word. And you can go there. It tells you a lot of stuff that you need to know, and you can actually send away for a pair of the goggles. Maybe a little late now. The right kind. And they're also having an interesting gift arrangement where you can send a pair to soldiers stationed in the Middle East.
All right.
Because they're going to have the best view of this whole thing and see what it goes on for 6 hours, the total length of this?
The whole length, yeah. It's over 6 hours long.
Yeah, and we'll get to see a few hours in other parts of the world. Okay?
All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
I might just say that there's another way of observing the transit if you don't happen to have these solar eclipse viewers. That is to use a pair of binoculars. Now, you don't look directly through the binoculars, mm-hmm. but you point the binoculars up towards the sun, and you just hold a piece of cardboard 3 or 4 or 5 feet behind the binoculars, and the binoculars will project an image of the sun onto the piece of cardboard.
They won't burn up the cardboard.
No, because you're far enough away. You don't have it that sharply focused.
Okay.
But that'll give you a nice view. You can see sunspots, and it'll give a good view for several people to observe the transit at the same time.
We're talking about the transit of Venus this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. And you just take the cardboard and move it back and forth to the eyepiece to sort of focus it in where you find the focus point.
By moving the cardboard back and forth, it changes the size of the image. The further away you have the cardboard, the larger the image will be.
And it will stay.
This is almost a two-person job here. One guy holds the binoculars, and it takes a little skill and practice. So if people are going to try to observe the transit this way, they should try it a couple of days beforehand so that they can get it choreographed correctly.
Now the first people who watched the transit saw something odd called the black drop. What is the black drop?
Well, the black drop throws back to this whole plan that Halley had for observing the transits and being able to measure the distance to Venus. He charged future generations since he realized he would not live to see the next transit of Venus. He admonished future generations of astronomers to make every effort possible to observe this event. And he expected them to be able to make very high precision measurements of the distance to Venus. The trouble was this infernal black drop effect, which Halley didn't know anything about. And the astronomers who went to the far corners of the Earth, people like James Cook, who went to Tahiti to observe the transit, when they went to make the timings, what you need to do is make very precise timings of when the transit begins and when the transit ends by watching Venus move across the sun's disk. But to make that timing, you're expecting Venus and the sun to be perfectly tangent to each other and then break away with just a little hairline of light shining between Venus and the sun, and you time that instant. What happens in reality is that the Earth's atmosphere smears Venus's image out, and it forms a little black nodule or ligature that connects it to the edge of the sun's disk for tens of seconds longer than it really should if there were no atmosphere. So this really messes up the timings, and it decreases the accuracy that you can use for this process of measuring the distance of Venus.
Let's go to the phones. Is it Moran in New Hampshire? Hi, go ahead.
Could you just explain what the significance of Venus is, why they knew hundreds of years ago it was what we needed to measure? I'm not even an armchair astronomer, so
That's a good question. Why would they decide that Venus is a good yardstick, and how do you make the measurement?
Well, the reason why Venus was picked, when Halley observed the transit of Mercury, he thought about trying to use the same technique. And let's talk about that just for a second. How do you measure this distance? If you hold your arm out at arm's length and look at your thumb with one eye and match it up against, something on the opposite side of your room, and now close that eye and open the other eye and look at your thumb, you'll see that your thumb has jumped back and forth against the far distant wall. That's parallax. And that's the same technique that Halley used. But instead of shifting either eye, you put one observer near the northern pole of the Earth and the other observer at the southern pole of the Earth, and they will see Venus along different lines of sight, and it'll pass along different parts of the sun. And by measuring those angles carefully, it's a matter of trigonometry. You create a right triangle, and you know this angle because you've measured the angle. You know the distance between the two observers because they're on the surface of the Earth. They've got latitudes and longitudes, and you can compute what the distance is. And you plug that all into – this is a little bit hard for me to do without a chalkboard to draw the triangles.
You've got one angle, and
you've got one side of a triangle, and it's a right triangle, and you can calculate the distance, the length of the third side.
That's what they did. Anybody who's been taking geometry or trigonometry in college or high school knows how to do this. I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with us, Fred.
Thanks a lot.
And you'll be out there looking, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm going to be out in Greece. I'm leaving tomorrow morning.
You're doing that. Somebody's got to do it, right?
I got to get a ringside seat for this. I'm not going to miss this event.
It's a rough job. Thanks. Fred Espenek is an astrophysicist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. We're going to go out to John Philip Sousa March. Now, it's aptly named. It's actually called the Transit of Venus. And it was commissioned by the Smithsonian for the unveiling of the Joseph Henry statue in 1883. 1 year after the last transit of Venus in 1882. Our program is produced by Ned Heiss, Charles Berquist, and Erica Altman. Our senior producer is Karen Vergoth, and Charles Berquist is also our director. If you have missed any of the references, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where you can leave us email and also send us some other ideas. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.